Hello everyone, welcome to Series 1 of Behind the Artist podcast with me, Sophie Skelton. I founded Behind the Artist back in March of 2023, interviewing an array of fantastic pioneering artists, giving an insight behind the artist and their work. I am fascinated by learning the process of how one's imagination can transpire into a work of art and become a masterpiece, treasured by society for years to come. As I delve into the personal lives of the artist, I will discover the highs of pursuing their passion as a career and explore the challenges they may endure as an artist in a modern society. Peter Davis is a Manchester-based artist and he's most recently been selected for the Herbert Smith Free Heels Award. His work is predominantly based around our relationship with technology and captures us in an urban environment. Peter is part of the Manchester Academy of Fine Arts, the Contemporary British Portrait Painters, and also the Castlefield Gallery Associates. Peter is a prize-winning professional fine artist. His portraits and urban landscapes capture contemporary life. He draws inspiration from the people he meets and the places he visits, and his work reflects today's societal narratives, including technology addiction, mental health, race, and gender. I'm looking forward to be able to speak to him today. I will just start with, how are you today?
I'm good, Sophie. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for inviting me to chat.
And so basically today, obviously, I've got a lot of questions. And I think I'm going to start with, how did you come to be an artist?
God. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, ever since I was little, really, you know, I've always loved art, loved drawing, loved painting, you know, from when I was really little. And it all comes back to my mum. My mum used to go to night school and do some painting herself, and so I would kind of see what she was doing, and I guess, you know, that encouraged me to do my own art. But I guess most significantly, she used to take me to art galleries. It might again been because she was doing art, so she did a copy of a Cezanne once that I've got on my walls now, which I love, and she used to take me to art galleries. And I guess at the beginning, I was kind of just went because I didn't have a choice. But I just very, very soon got into going to art galleries. And I particularly loved looking at paintings of different eras of, you know, times gone by. And I loved looking at the paintings and trying to work out what was going on with them. You know, why were they dressed like that? You know, what jobs did they do? And got into, I guess, kind of narrative within painting. And that's something that has stayed with me, really. I call her my art buddy. My mum still goes to galleries with me. You know, I went to the John Moores Painting Prize a couple of weeks with her, and she's so brilliant at, like, you know, stopping at a painting and not, you know, not taking it at face value, really, and looking into it and going, why have they done it like that? What does that tell me? And, you know, obviously there's a visceral kind of reaction. I like that. I don't like that. But then it goes deeper, is why do I like that? And why don't I like that? So I guess, you know, that really, you know, I've got to put it down to my mum. Total credit to her. Really.
Yeah, I love that. When you were going to these galleries when you were younger, how do you think that this sort of old masters have influenced your current work?
Yeah, well, again, yeah, it comes back to narrative. You know, I am a great believer as an artist that our role is to hold a mirror up to society, which is something that I definitely try to do. You know, and that kind of, you know, looking at scenes of everyday life, like I said, I like to look at, you know, ordinary people doing ordinary things. You know, that's called kind of genre painting. You know, and that's that is definitely stayed with me as a professional artist now, and, you know, and looking at the narratives within a painting and how a painting can tell kind of social history. I mean, looking at genre painting from centuries gone by has definitely influenced you know, the work and the narratives within my work, particularly my urban landscapes. So, you know, looking at people in place in a time, you know, I find absolutely fascinating in work, be it, you know, going back to to like the mid 1600s when you look at Vermeer and you look at the paintings that he did. If you look at painting, particularly like The Milkmaid, you know, it's a fantastic painting of a woman, and you're wondering what her story is. You can go forward to people like Sickert. I love Walter Sickert's work. I went to his retrospective at the Walker Art Gallery in Liverpool a couple of years ago, and that was just blew my mind. And there was a painting there called The Laundry Shop. Lovely, beautiful little painting. Again, you know, telling a scene, and it's you're looking through the door of a laundry shop at this woman working inside, and it's just so evocative. It's probably well documented that one of the artists I absolutely love is Edward Hopper. You know, I loved how he told a story of kind of 1920s, particularly 1920s New York and America as it was leading up to the Great Depression. You know, so he did a painting called Sunday in 1926. It's of a guy sitting on a pavement, looks utterly kind of rejected, and he's lost in his thoughts, and he's wearing a white shirt with those kind of elasticated kind of things you put on your arms, and it looks like he's kind of a bartender that's probably not working anymore. And you realise that actually, when was this painted? America in the 1920s was leading up. It was in recession, and it was leading up to the Great Depression. And I feel like you can look at a painting like that and take it at face value, but you can also think, so what story is it telling me? And when was it painted? And where is it painted? And you suddenly, it suddenly unravels, and you think, well, actually, it's telling me about the society at that time. So that I certainly bring that into my work. So my urban landscape started during lockdown, and because I was predominantly painting portraits and commissioned portraits up to that point, and obviously my zeitgeist paintings of people on their tech. But when I started to do urban landscapes, you know, I guess in my mind, you know, all those kind of the Sickerts and the because I saw that at around the same time as I started to do my urban landscape. So that Sickert painting, and thinking about, you know, why I loved Hopper, and actually going for my, you know, in the UK we were allowed to do our kind of hours walk during lockdown. So I used to go into Manchester, and I used to see some really interesting things going on streets that used to have fly posters of, you know, gigs and ads, but they weren't there now because all the venues had closed. So what people had started to do is artists had started to put their own messages up there, and started to do paste ups and fly posters of some really interesting messages, social messages. So I started documenting that really within my work, and there's a definite thread back to paintings in history.
Yeah, because I think it'll be interesting because, say, in a few years' time, some of the technology that you've captured in the actual paintings, people will be able to look at that as a stamp in time. Because, for example, like people holding a phone or people having headphones on, in a few years, that might be like something well in the past, and it's like you're pinpointing different periods.
Without
of time.
A doubt, that is at the heart of my practice, really, in my narratives. You know, I feel like compelled to tell the story of now, and what is, like you say, such a fleeting moment in time. You know, I guess it's for the most of your life, but not for the most of my life. You know, technology has been right at the heart of it. You know, but when I look back to, like, you know, 2007, 2008, and, you know, the emergence of the smartphone as we know it now, you know, that completely has revolutionized the way that we find information, chat to people, you know, do absolutely everything now through our phone and our devices. But that's going to be a blip in the history of our world, you know, and the digital revolution is moving so fast that although I do paint predominantly people on their phones, I guess, particularly in my urban landscapes, you know, I also paint people on other tech. So, you know, gaming devices, but VR is something I'm really fascinated by. And I painted a painting of my daughter on what was called Google Cardboard at the time, which was when Google released their kind of first opportunity for the mass to experience virtual reality. to what, when was that? 2017, I think, 2016, 2017. And that, and to now, you look at the way spatial computing is going and what Apple have just released, their mixed reality headset, and you're now seeing, I saw a clip on TikTok last week where you're seeing people, on the subway in New York with the headset on, typing virtually and interacting virtually with stuff. It's absolute mind blowing. It looks like futuristic Blade Runner, doesn't it? But it is now. So I'm an absolute believer that probably by the end of this decade, those scenes of people, which I'm painting at the moment, of people looking down as they're walking along the pavement, looking at a rectangle in their hands, is going to be gone pretty soon. So. So I'm just really enjoying that social documentary, who knows, the way that I might go to a show and see a Hopper painting, and that guy sitting on the pavement, maybe in the future people will look and go, "Mom, what's that? What's that guy holding there?" Oh, that would be how people, kind of got their information, before these glasses or before they were embedded in your face, things are evolving.
No, I think it's really interesting because obviously you're a very observant person, and I was going to say, your work obviously is very fit into the modern society that we live in now, because people can relate to your artwork. So would you say that there are any constraints by producing the work that you have done? Do you feel seeing as though you have sort of a running theme, I guess, with your mobile phones or different technology, do you ever feel because people, I guess some people will know you for that type of work, that you couldn't go out of it and do something different?
I don't know, really. I certainly think as a professional artist, it's good to have a thread and a kind of theme in the way you do paintings, I think. But for me personally, because it's a journey and because things are evolving so quickly, I do feel compelled to just trying to keep up with things. It is evolving. So, yeah. My Zeitgeist series, as I called it back in 2015 when I started it, of people with their devices was purely kind of very graphic portraits of people on their devices. And now it's evolved because of lockdown to urban landscapes as well. And I'm also starting to do more urban sketching where it is just documenting our inner cities particularly. And I'm using kind of recycled carrier bags to do that. And again, I feel like that zeitgeist because of that move away from kind of plastic to paper bags. And when you go shopping now, everybody, you get a paper bag and it says on it, "Please recycle, reuse in any way you can." So again, I feel like in terms of a zeitgeist, our era story, my work is evolving that way, which is slightly different. But you just gotta go. I think all artists feel like they've got a story inside them, or the way they see the world is something that they want to then paint. So it might be somebody who paints a beautiful country scene. That's what really fascinates them. And so for me, it is kind of people and tech and the urban environment and just the rapid change on both of those fronts that I really love painting.
Speaking more sort of about your actual sort of practice, so going from thinking of an idea and thinking of a composition and then turning that into the finished product, what's your sort of process from that first initial idea to then producing it into a painting?
So I guess if we look at both sides, so when it comes to my kind of zeitgeist portraits, as I would say, I meet the sitter. I find that really, really important. Is if I'm doing a portrait, is to meet the sitter, get to know them a bit. It might be as quick as over a cup of tea and a chat. I've done some preliminary sketches, but to be honest, because of the whole people and tech thing, I find it much better to say, "Look, you go on your device. And I'm just going to observe you. And I do it with my phone, with my camera. And I just take hundreds and hundreds of shots. And I find it really important not to direct them beyond saying, do what you do. And then I'll just work yeah. around them and just document them in the process of them engaging with their technology. And then when I'm back in the studio, I'll look back at, you know, it's not unusual to take, you know, 800 photographs, images of someone. And I'll just look at that. And I think those kind of idiosyncrasies of the way people move and the facial expressions they do certainly come through when you're looking at that many reference images. And then I'll start to consider a composition. But crucially, I never paint a portrait from one reference image, because that's just kind of copying in a sense that it's very flat. And yeah. I find doing almost like a 180 pan of somebody during the sitting is much more beneficial. So I get to understand their facial features, the way light hits their features, the way they move, and over a course of a number of reference images, I can get a sense of them much better than if I go, that's the image I'm going to paint. And then really kind of halfway yeah. through a painting, I'll pretty much ditch the being precious on that, you know, what might be a key image. And I'll start to look at how I want to bring their character to life through all the other reference images that I've found. So you have to kind of part that and then move beyond to the next day. So that's certainly in terms of the portraits. In terms of the urban landscapes, you know, I'm always, when I'm out and about, I'm always looking at what's happened since I've been to this particular part of town or city. And I will occasionally do some street casting. So if I see someone interesting, I'll pluck up the courage and ask them. Sometimes it goes well and they go, sure. And other times they go, you're a weirdo? No, thanks. So it's all a bit hit and miss that. But, you know, I do that. Some people I sneakily take references of if they're in an interesting kind of pose, sitting on a bench or whatever. And then it's about the street. I'm finding increasingly my urban landscapes are very much about the interplay between the street art, and then a passerby on their device. And you know, talking about the evolution of my work, you know, I am very, very interested in our fast-changing cities and how I feel like street art, you know, murals that are kind of more official, graffiti being slightly more yeah. unofficial, and yeah. paste-ups. I'm absolutely fascinated at how over the past, you know, I think probably as little as maybe 3 or 4 years, it's really ballooned into a whole new language. And I'm absolutely fascinated in that, you know, certainly around, you know, political, social comment and expression, you know, how that is manifesting itself on the streets. And I just find that, again, in terms of documenting our era, so kind of important. I absolutely love it. And it's probably taken over as one of my main obsessions. Yeah. It's what's happening now on the street. Just because there's so many brilliant, again, visual artists that are shouting about what they want to document, what they want to say, what they want to talk about. So then again, it's about bringing that back into the studio and creating a composition that tells that story.
I think it's really interesting, because I was thinking, would you ever create a mural or like a something in a city? So actually, on a wall in the city, would you ever want to do one of your paintings?
It's funny. That would really scare me, I think. And also, there's kind of two sides to me, really. There's the kind of public face of me, which is, I guess, like this, and I'm very happy to talk about my work, the narratives, and you know, art broadly speaking. But my practice is deeply personal, I feel. You know, I feel like I love painting and I love the practice of painting. It's really very important to me, and I'm very, very fussy and very, very exacting. And I have I work in layers and I take my time over it. But actually, kind of the theatre of painting, which might impact in my mind as a muralist, is something that I really don't like to do in public. I find, like, from a mental health point of view and a focus, I kind of like to be in my own space. So I think the thought of me rocking up on a street with a load of spray cans and watching people do it would really make me nervous. So that's it. But it's interesting because that is what I'm documenting.
I mean, when you exhibit and you're showing your work, do you ever feel nervous of what people think, or are you more just sort of you're happy with it and anyone else can have their opinions of it, but you don't really take, so say like criticism and stuff like that, do you ever take that to heart or?
Yeah, of course we all do. I think we're all artists are hugely fragile people. Even the ones that don't come across, I think we're all very, very sensitive. But no, I'm always very proud. If a painting leaves my studio and I feel like, do you know what, I can't do any more to this, I feel like it's right, then I can't wait to get it framed and I can't wait to see it on the walls and see it in a show. And obviously sometimes it's just about putting it on social. But yeah, I love seeing my work on a show at a PV, and people who don't know me, and I'll see them chatting about and pointing at a piece, and I'll go up to them and I'll very proudly say, "I hope you're saying something nice. I'm the artist." And then we'll enter a dialogue about the work. And I was in the Manchester Art Fair end of last year, and again I did that. I took a step back and pretty much anybody, any all the people that came to the work, I would go up and say that, and then start a conversation. And it's fascinating how people read the work, and even though I've got a narrative within a piece, they might read something else into it, or they may not see it that level. So I love telling them about it. So in terms of criticism, no, I'm well up for hearing positives and negatives. The negatives obviously can sometimes get into your head and takes a few days to move beyond it. But on the whole, people's comment, are there for a reason, so it is interesting hearing how people translate your work. All my work, every single painting that I do, my daughter signs off before I finished it. I will do a painting up to kind of 95%, what I would call it's at snagging stage, and I'll send some pictures of it to her because she doesn't live at home anymore, and I'll send her some pictures and say, "Would you just snag this painting for me?" And she knows now that she can be as critical as she can, and I'll take it because, once you, as an artist, if you're doing a piece of work, you're so close to it that sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees. So she'll look at a painting, and particularly if it's a portrait or something, she'll say, "Dad, I'm not sure this bit of a painting is right, or you might need to do a bit of that." And so I'll get a snag. So
I love that,
I'm more than happy to hear the good and the bad, but it is great to just chat to people about your work.
I think when you've got children and it's like a father daughter, you're very honest. I think I especially am.
And she's
So
yeah, and
yeah, I think it's good.
she's like me, she's 2.0, talk 2.0 me really. So she's a fashion researcher in a job, so she is uber visually aware and uber fussy. So she's the right person to pick the brain, and I'll take it.
If you were to sit with any artist and watch them paint, who would it be and why?
I mean, this is probably a very predictable answer, but I would say, if I could go into Lucian Freud's studio, and sit in the corner, I would be fascinated. He is absolutely in his own league, or he was, in terms of visceral, painterly painters. And so, I've seen photos of his studio and heard some horrendous stories about his relationship with his sitters and how he would treat them, like when he painted the Queen. And but I guess, yeah, if I could be invisible, I'd have to be invisible in the corner of the studio because I probably wouldn't want him to acknowledge me. But yeah, he would be the one, wouldn't he? But yeah, I guess,
I
Francis
think,
Bacon,
yeah.
another one, even like yeah, Eve Klein, be really interesting. Jackson Pollock. I guess you're looking at those very performance based kind of painters unlike myself, where I like to be, you know, in my own space and just in my own zone and doing it, very, very much one-to-one relationship between me and the canvas. You know, I feel like some of those artists that I just mentioned are very performative, and you know, it's very much about the process of putting that paint on the surface.
And where do you think that your artwork will go in the next 10 years?
Hopefully into some nice public collections. very lucky that some of them have already, but yeah, that'd be nice. In terms of narrative, I just feel like I've got such a rich vein on this relationship with people and their tech, and like I say, it's moving so fast. I think the core body of work is gonna stay on that track, but there will be some things left and right of that, like the urban sketching I'm doing, and who knows what might come next. I'm interested in collaborating with some digital artists. Is something that I've kind of had in my back pocket that I'd really love to do. I've been to a meetup group a few times, particularly just before lockdown, called VR Manchester, and I was kind of just at the point of lockdown. I was about to collaborate with some digital artists on doing a piece. So I'm quite interested in the kind of me being a physical painter in, you know, IRL in the real world, and maybe, you know, collaborating with a digital artist and seeing how we might tackle the same topic from two different sides. Or, you know, I'm quite interested in a digital artist doing a portrait of me, and I'll do a portrait of them, you know. So I think it might go that way. But I think in terms of the narrative of people and technology, I think that's probably what I'm going to stick with.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you'd like to read more of my interviews, please head to www.behindtheartist.co.uk. Thank you again, and I will see you in the next episode.